The opening scene would be a boat or vessel, something of a remarkable size, although I didn't explore the full extent of its interior. This was my impression, or perhaps my real self-knowledge, and it is my personal self that doesn't understand how I can know the dimensions of something I haven't explored. Everything is, and so, connected to my real self, and standing real with the ears, will have me in a place of being isness too, and so I just would be and see, accessing all information simultaneously. Any questions, queries and doubts must stem from the personal created self. Anyway, it surely was a vessel of a mixed variety of peoples, and we all seemed to get along just swimmingly. I was there in my created Kevin human form, and we were standing on a part of the vessel that was like a monitoring station. There were screens everywhere, and they were displaying scenes occurring all over the Earth. They may have been connected with actual networks and feeding us these happenings, or maybe they were a little like those view screens that Dwayne utilized throughout his adventures in the new books, where we could see events, past, present, and future. A few times I have been with guides also, and have regarded events in a similar fashion, like watching them on TV. A few experiences where the outcome wasn't as it may have been, and I had the opportunity to watch it on these view TVs, then become reinserted in the experience at a pivotal point and exact a more awareness viewpoint beneficial outcome. Anyway, the scenes were that of great disasters, the planet racked with apocalyptic type events. But here we were, safe aboard our vessel. At this point, Lindsay was here in the monitoring section, Lindsay being my sister, and was indeed the only one I visibly recognized. And this was the only point in the experience she would be here. The scene moved, and now I was at the helm with the captain of the vessel. I'm not very versed in ship terminology, but it was the section where all the steering wheels are, the driving area. A front row seat, the big windows affording us the view of the sea beyond as we ploughed onward through the waters. At this point, I was in the form now of a robot, but was in no way diminished and restricted, as a robot may well have been, should one return to a robotized Earth in a future lifetime, as an example. I was assisting the captain, carrying out a few duties here and there, my personal self feeling rather delighted at being in this part of the vessel with him. Then I informed the captain we were fastly approaching a monstrous wave of tremendous proportions, but he was unconcerned, and indeed gave the order to set a course for this very wave, and we would meet it head on. My little robot personal head was spinning. I protested at this decision, but the captain was adamant, and he had an air of knowingness about him, a powerful sense of purpose and being, that, despite my qualms, I knew everything would be all right, and I had trust in this course of action. We approached the daunting wave. What preceded it was turbulent waters that half flooded the part of the vessel we were in, but I was confident that all would be well, and besides, the time for turning back was past. The mighty wave roared into sight. At the moment it should have struck the vessel, it transformed and seemed to be something else. It was more like rather a golden gateway. I couldn't really describe it, but this was the closest literal interpretation that best suited the impression as we passed harmlessly through it. We were in a new place now. Fine buildings and many peoples everywhere. No longer on our vessel. It was nowhere to be seen, and here we were. At this moment, I was with a handful of others, and the captain, and I know not as to where the other people of the vessel were. I was still in the form of the robot, and now the captain had another obstacle to negotiate, it would seem. He had to battle with the champion of this place, a very powerful-looking man, his body covered with markings and designs. The fight ensued, and although I felt the captain could win with ease, he allowed himself to be bested, and there he lay, defeated. One of the individuals I was with suggested I check for a pulse, and when I reached down to do so, the captain had vanished. I was perplexed, but this individual proclaimed the captain still to be here, how he could see him, and that the captain was fine, but to my robot eyes, he had gone from this place. After a while, I wandered about, and came across a kind of veil that separated this place we were currently in from the physical level we had vacated, the Earth and all its catastrophes. I passed through it to take a look, evidently able to do this, and perfectly safe to do so, standing in my real self then. I perceived a new world, a reconstituted world, very vibrant and fresh compared to the diseased planet it had been. I clunked about on my metal feet and came across lots of animals and wildlife. Some of the animals, based on their appearance, should have been perhaps aggressive, such as the snakes I saw, but absolutely none had any tendencies or inclination to be aggressive. They were all friendly, more inquisitive of me than opposed to my presence. Here the dream would end. At first, I would have considered the vessel to perhaps be a place of safety, not unlike some of the other dreams I have had, where new friends are afforded safe haven as the world goes through its decided course of demise. Everything experienced being the overall effect of the causes set in motion through decisions, choices, and agreements. And as the majority are in agreement with ideas that represent demise and awareness constriction, then this is the experience they will have. But for those deciding to recognize their real intent and become more aware, they stand in the new nowness beyond cause and effect creation, and so through this choice, they will not be the unconscious effects of their unawareness, as the majority are. And it seems new friends deciding this may well be afforded a position that has them continuing on with their process unhindered by the coming global upheavals. I had the sense this was one of the new presentation vessels, as it had these televisions monitoring the world that were more along the lines of view TVs. Maybe not a vessel then in a physical sense, but a vessel already built on the real side, and its actualization on the physical dependent on agreement to make it so. So, we were witnessing the final culmination of the restricted positions decided by the majority, and the demise of the planet agreed to and delivered, but we were safe here in our vessel. So maybe we were being taken to a safer position through the life levels, to one which will give us a little breathing space for the completion of our recognition of the real universes and awareness process, travelling to this destination aboard the real side new presentation vessel. Evidently then, those with me here were new friends, or those with the real intent and heart for the journey, standing real and thus superseding the necessity to experience these end-time physical level disasters. I did not recognize them, but assumed they perhaps were those I did not know on the physical level, or at least not as familiar with, or I wasn't really considering their identities, as often we don't on the real side, and only on waking do we ponder as to who they were. The others may have been in other parts of the vessel, or maybe other vessels sailing beyond the physical, literally speaking, as everything is, and so there is no travelling to anywhere, in fact. It's all about recognition. And here now was Lindsay, my sister, who continues to show no interest in the new presentation and the knowledge of the is and the guides, etc. But I have seen a fluctuation of interest on the real side with her. Sometimes she listens, sometimes she will not. She didn't have her usual attitudes and created a consciousness here. Her atypical personal self was absent. So maybe I was encountering one of her vehicles on a higher level in the psych realms, beyond some of the mental and emotional dross that makes up the created self. But it's unlikely she would be here, as I would say none of her vehicles throughout the creational life levels have the focus and real intent recognized to move beyond the experience that she would be sharing with the majority of people back on the physical level Earth. So she may have been a guide, as they often assume roles of family members and such, and thus they can feature in an experience, but not draw too much attention, lest the individual focus too much on them rather than the experience they are providing. With all individuals that we know, regardless of how we are with them, there will be emotional attachment and tap lines, particularly with family members. These must be released, or anything we cling to and tap lines us still will have us trapped in the cause and effect cycles of the incarnational creational matrix. So maybe this was a demonstration, a reminder of emotional tap lines I need to address, exemplified by Lindsay standing there. Maybe, yes, she was a guide, but providing a demonstration by the very form the guide chose to adopt. Perhaps then I was successful, taking heed, recognizing this tap line, and deciding its removal, as now I was in the front of the ship, with the captain at the wheel. If I had retained the tap line, I may not have had this privilege, a little like dreams, where I have been presented with an agreement or attachment, decided its release, and then the consequent scene is one I would have not experienced had I not removed the tap lines. My awareness and ability to recognize the scene lacking, as the agreement and attachment maintained, retains the literal filters of the created consciousness, making recognition of it impossible. So had I not released this particular tap line, I may not have been in this scene, a continuous unfolding of positions made possible through the recognition of them by my willingness to take the next step, face my created self, and go through the process, which would ultimately have one standing with the ears if the journey was taken to its conclusion. So the captain of the vessels must have been Dwayne, as he did indeed have that being-isness sense about him, that inimical trait of all sincere and aware beings that can't be duplicated by sneaky controllers. Seems then that assuming the form of a robot demonstrated my switching a little to my personal self in light of the situation and oncoming wave. The robot bodies demonstrating rigidity, of self-convinced created consciousness when peoples assume such body types in the lifetimes to come. It is a reflection of their rigid, unwavering personal selves as they become ever more constricted, self-absorbed, and fossilized in their contentions of what they think life is. The body types they assume will mirror this, a consequence of the agreement to such restricting and limiting ideas, cause and effect having them experience these robot bodies in far more mechanized and restricted life circumstances. Everyone will have their personal created self, and it will be a bother and burden until we need the vehicles no longer, when our process is complete. But until then, it will interject and intercede if we allow it, and it's apparent when it is. And when we are fully standing real and connected to our real selves, we simply be and see, and there is nothing added on top. Any fears, concerns, worries, considerations, and questions indicate the presence of that pesky personal self. So the demonstration was along these lines. I had concerns about Captain Dwayne's decision to steer into the wave. For as my personal self came to bear, my recognition diminished, and I was viewing things through the literal filters of my personal self. I saw a wave. It was big. It was scary. Let's go this way instead, Captain. And the robot body demonstrated my slipping into my personal and more rigid self. But enough of my real self was there too. I stood real with Dwayne, and into the wave we went. Evidently, this was the new wave ears, the ears surging through creation and carrying with it the opportunity to supersede the simulator. Dwayne bringing forth this super knowledge for anyone who cares to pay attention. The new wave was in evidence then for all to see, but only for a small window, and this demonstrated here as we sailed toward it. At this point then, it's very conceivable the window was closing, and people not paying attention would quite literally miss the boat. Time's up. Those having decided to be a part were fine and on board, and we sailed into the mighty new wave, which became a kind of golden gateway, as was my impression of it. We may have landed then in a higher position in creation, and the golden gate prior to that represented the chance for those with the recognition to jump right into the real universes of the ears. Those perhaps lacking the recognition at this moment missed the golden gate that could only be passed through with recognition, but nevertheless assumed a higher position in the creational life levels, where they could proceed with their awareness process. and I was amongst those, having missed the gate of the ears, but was beyond the lower imploding life levels nonetheless, and demonstrated by my being still in my robot form, maybe tapline free, that allowed this voyage to this position, but maybe lacking the recognition to be with the ears for now. And then another demonstration. Dwayne did engage with an individual on this life level. Maybe this individual was representing the oppositional force of the majority of humanity, a final ditch effort to get their attention, but they still weren't listening, still resisting Dwayne and what he was trying to bring through. So here, Dwayne engaged the unaware, but didn't battle or fight them, letting them decide whatever they wanted, but still presenting the ears. As I knew, Dwayne allowed this individual to best him. For if we fight with others and impose our will on them, this is an infringement on their free will, a control, and we are drawn into cause and effect, and we are no longer standing real with the ease. Everything in creation being ideas, we don't return fire or start creating ideas in response. We present, step around the ideas, stand real, and supersede creation. And if others choose not to, in creation they remain. And here, Dwayne faded away from sight. He was off on his journey now, further into the ears. The one beside me stated how he could see Dwayne still, and so may have been a universal guide. From this position, even though higher in creation, I could see Dwayne no more. He had completed his assignment, and his creational life-level vehicles, including this one, were of no further use to him, and were no more. They faded away. He was off into the ears, and some new friends had gone straight into the real universes of the ears too. Others, like me, were here and could still continue with the process and join them later, but best not linger too long, as creation was imploding, and that would include all life levels. Bouncing about in my little robot vehicle still, I found a veil and peeked through and investigated this reset Earth beyond. For yes, I had the impression this was representing the reset of the simulator, the epoch having gone through its final cause and effect decided upon demise, imploded, and here was the reconstituted simulator, a new golden age. If I had still been on that creational life level, high as it was still a part of the simulator, and would have been destroyed too. And I would be caught in the reset if I hadn't completed the process of awareness and recognition. So I was either in the real universes and taking a peek at the new reformatted simulator, or simply being afforded this final viewpoint at the end of this dream. I saw no peoples, just lush vegetation and animals. Individuals then, in stages of rudimentary body forms and vehicles, before free will kicks in, is utilized, and everything goes along, agreed to, cause and effect, roots of experience again. Or maybe just a confirmation of how, when individuals are reset in the golden age, so too is their created consciousness, as their vehicles and life levels are gone with the previous imploded simulator, starting from point zero then, with no consciousness created as yet, ideas agreed to, emotional attachments, routines, habits, or charged emotional ideas to draw from the causal body, demonstrated by the animals that I determined should act in this way or that, maybe aggressively, but that only had just a clean and pure inquisitiveness, attitudes and ways of being you would expect from individuals with a consciousness still in its rudimentary stages of being created and put together.
As you're explaining that, and how you re-went over it is very, very good. And actually, this is what is actually taking place. And yes, it is a recognition, and very few will see it. And there's more to this. This is the surprise that's coming. But you're seeing it. You're being prepared. And you'll be fine. It's just really cool. Please write that down, and let's share that out there, because it's a real preparation for what is coming, what is taking place from the real side, and will become evident. And yes, people have to pay attention. We're trying to let the world know the best we can, but huge resistance with the consciousness, and people are so layered by so much deformity and disinformation, and plus all the havoc that's going on with the fires and the chemtrails and just everything that's going on. They're just poisoning this planet as fast as they can. And so those that step up and have the courage, okay, it's a big journey to get through the personal self, but you're seeing it, young man. Let people know, your family, everybody, because it's coming. And all of a sudden, there's that scene in Terminator about the middle of the movie where the gal is at the chain link fence and she sees this lady with her child on a swing and trying to warn her but can't get to her. And all of a sudden, the atom bomb goes off. And that's how fast it will happen. And people will panic. And so we have a wonderful surprise for people coming up that we've been working on the real side for a long time. But you got to see it. You got to want to see it. Again, each person decides their life. And this is an opportunity like never before, because all those political, religious, spiritual paths, scientific, or whatever that people have been through and have to deal with here, they have nothing to do with the whole of life, but it's all in cause and effect creation. And if you don't wake up more so than just this personal self, then you got to deal with it. That's how real it gets. Just like this world is totally poison, that's how real it gets. You can think in your mind, oh, no, it's not that. I'm still breathing. I'm still walking around for a few moments. That's all you got. You only got a few moments, and then it's going to come to that moment where you're not, and you're going to wonder where you're at. So, again, I suggest pay attention.
In this dream, I was afforded an interesting objective viewpoint indeed, from the perspective of what I can only describe as the blob. If you have ever seen Steve McQueen's movie, The Blob, you'll know the nature of this particular beastie, as it was very similar to this creature I found myself as. It had a voracious appetite, if that's what it was. It was rather difficult to exactly determine the nature of its activities, but every creature, being or individual, it came into contact with, it would engulf, absorb, assimilate, and seemingly incorporate into itself. It was a large mass, a heaving black creature with no defining shape, and was almost, and was amidst, bipedal humanoid individuals, which were fleeing this creature, so evidently the absorption was only beneficial to this blob. From my blobby viewpoint, I didn't have much by way of created personality, emotion, or mental consideration. I was rather indifferent as I went about my gobbling up activities. So this creature was much like an animal then, in a state of awareness as animals are, just doing what it does, being and seeing with nothing added, no emotion or mental ideas attached to the experiences it was having. Then, after a time of viewing from this creature's perspective, I was afforded another view. A view again from this individual's perspective, but from the lifetime it had had prior to its life as a blob. In this lifetime, the individual was in a strange place in life, a sort of realm or dimension, where it was constantly hunted, attacked, killed endlessly, and somehow surviving all this, rinsing and repeating, and subjected to this torment again. There seemed no rest for this being. It was constantly under siege. I didn't get much by way of a look at its attackers, or the vehicle and view I had. I and it were rather busy surviving. But unlike the future lifetime, where it would become a blob, it was adding to its experience. It was finding everything understandably not to its liking, getting rather irate at its mistreatment, and harbouring charged emotional ideas and projections of rage and revenge. Then the dream would end. An interesting view, my awareness affording the knowledge that the individual I was viewing from in both lifetimes was the same, the current one as the blob, and then shifting to its previous lifetime. In each form, I took on its personal self, or lack of it, as it was an animal of a kind in both lifetimes, but maintaining an objective view also that I wasn't immersed fully in the individual's experience. From here, I could make my determinations of what was transpiring and glean impressions. The blob individual was in a state of awareness, yes, and was just being what it was, indifferent to its experience. But the individual's previous lifetime had been quite the opposite, and despite being an animal of a kind also, It was adding far more emotional ideas to its experience, and along the lines of fear, aggression, etc. We can see then how individuals can be moved along in their body forms, for without creating ideas, emotion, thought, and utilizing the body vehicle as a generator of cause and effect, experiences which would move an individual along and project into its next lifetimes would be lacking. We have learned how the ease moves individuals' body forms along until free will is established, and through that an individual takes control of the generating of experience through choices and idea creation. It seems that the ears would only perhaps need to move an individual along if there was nothing that said individual was generating in regards to cause and effect experience, or an individual wouldn't move at all. If as an animal it was in its state of only awareness and adding nothing on top, it would be in the now of the is, and outside of cause and effect. We have learned how individuals who come fresh from the is are already given a little karma, just to kickstart the experiential process and unfolding of their lives. Seems then that what moves animal forms along is adversity, as this generates astral emotional responses, and cause and effect will follow, and according to the nature of the experience and the emotion added by the animal dictates what it will project as a future lifetime. In this experience we see the progression, an animal living a lifetime of fear and rage as a result of its experience, and this want to not be in such a position, not so much an articulation in its mind as an emotional drive, resulting in it being something that was quite the opposite in the next lifetime, a role reversal almost. And it would not surprise me that those it was now absorbing had been those individuals hunting and causing it grief in its prior lifetime, as by their actions they had created a cause and effect that would culminate in them being the victims of the individual they had attacked last lifetime around. Maybe these individuals locked into each other's cause and effect experience would cycle on this way forever, back and forth, until such time as awareness affords them a means to move into a position of new nowness beyond cause and effect karma. But anyway, I thought it was interesting how even animals in their awareness state will be projecting future lifetimes too, based on their reactions and rudimentary emotional considerations to the experiences that they have, all spiraling from the initial karma given to them as they first stepped into creation as an amoeba or whatever. Every individual's lifetimes and positions will be unique, and it can be seen here how in one lifetime one individual can be the hunted and in the very next lifetime be the aggressor. explaining also how the idea of evolution actually is. For if individual considerations bring forth different body forms, then it follows that collectively a species' body form can adapt and change in accordance with a want or desire based on experience that stimulates such wants. A harmless snake species collectively seeding a need to have more protection, and so cause and effect, the reflective return of all that is wanted and sought, culminates in the snake species adopting the coloration of a more venomous variety to ward off attackers. The harmless king snake adopting the color striations of the venomous coral snake, for example. Or perhaps we have an example of how, if an individual churns out very intense emotional ideas, or creates in a way that is adverse to others, the individual can regress to an animal form in the next lifetime. We have learned how the world controllers, continuing with their restricting ways, can end up becoming distorted in future body forms, and even projecting further into forms of alligators and swamp beasts if they persist. So maybe this individual, although the recipient of adversity, created charged emotional ideas of such a nature as to find itself projecting into more of an animal form in the future, the blob, as in its hunted lifetime, it may well have been an animal of a kind, but one perhaps just creeping into the sort of position where free will is afforded and utilized poorly, and so regressing back into an animal form again the next time around. I can imagine individuals fluctuating a bit between awareness animal and free will afforded body types in their lifetimes, until they perhaps get a better handle on their free will and move forward rather than back. And of course, for the individual on the process of awareness, it's all about experience and the comparisons, recognizing the is by comparing it to what it is not, which is every experience that we have in the psych realms. And what affords greater experience is a greater array of viewpoints from a greater plethora of individuals and body forms. And so the real guides afford us experiences of this nature, allowing that we view from the perspective of other beings, so we can get even more comparisons to determine what the is not, that we can recognize it better. And this experience not only gave me an objective view, but also to see cause and effect in action in regards to how individuals move from one body form to another as they create and project their future lifetimes. In this dream, it seems I had a mission or objective of a kind. Here I would find myself in a two-layered building. It was very lavish, very delightfully decorated, gleaming white, and with nothing that would be unappealing to the eye. I seem to know what I was doing and why I was here. So I was very much connected and standing with my real self. The entire place served a dual purpose. Guests and individuals would arrive at the bottom floor, which served as the eating area. When their meals were complete, they would transition upstairs to the second floor, which was a maze of corridors that ultimately converged on large open sections. Seems the visitors assumed or were informed that after their undoubtedly very exquisite meal, they would be taken upstairs for something equally as emotionally appealing. I'm not sure exactly what the guests thought they were going to receive on floor number two, but it wasn't quite what they had been led to believe. For on the upper floor were these raptor-like creatures, and they lurked in the large open areas that the unsuspecting guests would be led to. The guests then would meet an ill fate. They would be attacked and consumed by the raptors. So effectively, this place was a trap, baiting people in with the promise of fine dining and even more delights beyond that. But in actuality, it was a setup, and the visitors were but food for these raptors. So it seems I had somehow infiltrated this operation, and I had the position of a butler or waiter. There was no build-up or precursor to where I found myself. I was just there, and in the midst of my mission, it would seem, my real self going about it, and the personal self was on board, as it always will be, and confused and trying to figure it out. I was upstairs before the guests were to arrive. I wasn't supposed to be there, for if I was seen by the raptors, my cover would be blown. I would give the game away, or at least raise their suspicions, as my duties as a waiter should not involve my being beyond the bottom section, the dining area. Nevertheless, I was familiarizing myself with the layout, peeking down the maze of corridors, carefully investigating all the rooms, as there seemed to be bedrooms up here too, sleeping quarters and such. I knew this place as I'd been here before, it seemed. It did seem very familiar, but perhaps a time ago, so I was re-familiarizing myself. I knew where the raptors were. They waited in the open areas that the guests would be led to, so I was careful not to go near these, only as close as I deemed necessary to be certain that the layout was known to me. The guests would dine and be led up here. Some individuals would lead them to their demise. I imagine the individuals doing this would look very human as the waiter I had replaced. Everything would look very normal and fine until the doors to the open raptor-infested areas were opened, of course. I was going to be joined by a group later and timing it just so We would sneak upstairs. When the dined guests were taken, we would deal with the individuals leading the guests to their doom and sneak the guests out of the building, saving them from the raptors. Because the guest quota was divided in half, the first half arrived and once dined were led upstairs, and the second half filed in and would be seated in the dining area. I figured that my group would have enough time to seat the guests, then catch up with those being led upstairs to their slaughter, save them and bring them back downstairs, then gather up all those waiting for their meals and whisk them all to safety and beyond this place. And so it was on. The experience jumped a few scenes to the point where the first batch of guests had completed their meals and were going up the stairs, led by their very charming hosts. I had the second group of guests seated, and so far, all was going to plan. While I was seating them, I noticed a very expensive car pull up outside the building, like the sort of car you might see a president being driven in, or perhaps royalty, as it indeed turned out to be. The Queen of England stepped from the car and approached the dining area, dressed as you would normally see her on television, and presenting the world with her usual harmless and disarming appearance. This was not going to script now. She would approach and hover in the doorway. She seemed rather disinterested in anything, not even giving me a glance, but whispered something in one of the guest's ears, a guest seated nearest to the doorway. The Queen then glided away with equal indifference, returned to her car, and departed. The one she had spoken with became glassy-eyed, almost as though hypnotized. And then she would stand and begin causing disruption, shrieking and upturning chairs. I had now to deal with this situation, where I should have been upstairs and rescuing the first batch of unwitting guests. But I would have some assistance at this point, as I was pointing out to the other unsettled diners how I suspected the Queen had hypnotized the unruly guest somehow, a subliminal suggestion or other. They all looked bewildered. I had the sense that somehow they hadn't even seen the Queen, for they didn't react to her presence when she was here as individuals would when confronted with royalty. There was an individual amongst the guests I had not noticed before, but when she spoke, I had the impression she was a real guide, and she had been here to watch and afford help if required, and she would do so now. She produced a musical instrument, a kind of flat keyboard-like device, with some raised sections, and waving her hands across this, it would produce the most delightful sound, and she would sing along with this voice and song of equal quality. The effect was instantaneous. the deranged guest settled at once and was becalmed. Now my mission could continue, but where were the others that were supposed to join me at this moment? They were nowhere to be seen, and moments were passing. The guests upstairs being led closer to their fate. This is where the dream would end. On the verge of executing stage two, the rescue bid, but waiting for the others of my group, who seem to have been delayed. Perhaps part two will unveil itself somewhere down the road a ways. And so, what we have here are the reptilians, and they are evidently eating people, which is what they have a tendency to do. The raptors in this dream would be the reptilians. I'm uncertain why I referred to them as raptors, as I wouldn't actually lay eyes on them in this dream. But as I said, the place seemed familiar, as though I'd been here before. Maybe I had. Maybe I was once one of the guests in some other dimension or lifetime and met my end here. Or that the real self knows far more than the personal self, perhaps, and tends to just operate as it will, dragging the personal self along that hasn't any inkling as to what's occurring, and will question as to how I know what I do and why I call them raptors, etc. In fact, I could picture them as just that, the raptors you would see in Jurassic Park, the movie, for example. And so, in that form, yes, but the demonstration, as is often the case, of seeing dinosaurs on the real side is that they represent the reptilians. Further confirmation of this being a reptilian operation was the arrival of the Queen, who is, of course, as all the world controllers are, a reptilian. Seems she was here to disrupt my mission of rescue, but do so in a way as to not alarm or concern the human guest cattle. Imagine were a squad of reptilians to burst in and physically accost me. The guests might surely be suspicious then. There would be panic, and everyone undoubtedly would try and leave. A far better ploy, then, perhaps, to delay me, that I can't reach the guests upstairs in time, as I had to deal with this situation here, as the Queen whispered some witch-like command into the ear of a guest, and had that guest going berserk. And the guides always are close at hand, in this case, watching all along, and I had not noticed. They tend to let the new students handle themselves and situations alone as much as possible, that we become better able and adept at dealing with creation as we go about our adventures and sharing of the ears' activities. But they are never far, and on this case, she would step in and return the situation to a degree of normality for my mission to continue on. I would say her musical instrument and song was along the lines of the musics of the ears, for it was very delightful, but perhaps not the full extent of that which you might hear with the ears, as it may have been too much for those unaccustomed to such sounds. These guests here were not aware individuals by any stretch, just finding themselves in this predicament, and too much exposure to sounds and such of life levels and the real universes would be overwhelming for them, or they may not have been able to recognize them. So possibly then music of the ears, but reduced to a state that this individual can recognize and hear, but is still effective enough to break the spell of the Queen. So where exactly was I? Was this a place off planet where individuals were taken to be eaten? Was it made to look fine on the surface, the marketing ploy of everything in creation that is not what it seems, or perhaps more a demonstration then of creation? How everything on the planet looks very fine, and everybody therefore agrees to the marketing front of all they literally perceive. But what they are agreeing with are ideas of demise, control, restriction, and are taplined accordingly. And the taplines are planted in them, on the astral, by the reptilians, which supply the reptilians with their energy. The agreeable masses, then, are not only restricted and limited through the ideas they agree with, but are energetically drained through the taplines and become ill, and ultimately death finds them. So this entire dream was perhaps a demonstration of a creation. All the individuals on the bottom floor, on the physical life level, and unable to see past the delightfully packaged marketing fronts they have been presented with, due to their literalized programmed selves, they cannot see beyond what their literal senses reveal to them, and are in agreement with these marketing fronts, which are in essence agreement to ideas that keep them trapped in the lower levels of the creational matrix. And the second level of this building would represent then the astral level, where the taplining occurs, courtesy of the reptilians, as they drain the unconscious and unsuspecting individuals from this level unseen and unrecognized by them, demonstrated here by the raptors literally eating them. And we can see how limited in their recognitional awareness they are, for even when the Queen arrived, seems they could not see her, a little like the masses, who cannot even recognize the fact that the planet is being polluted and destroyed. They can't even see the dangers of the 5G, etc. For many, the programmed agreement is so absolute that they see but fractions of what their world actually is, a human farming planet. For yes, reptilians physically eat people and energetically drain them from the astral, and this real side dream could be either. And how subtle the Queen is to interfere with my mission, again to not draw attention of the masses to perpetuate their unconscious consideration of how they think the world is. Seems I was there to put a stop to this particular reptilian meal for whatever reason. Maybe a demonstration of how we are trying to bring about a worldwide wake-up and are attempting to bring awareness to people as to how the world is not what they think it is, including the taplining, amongst other things, that goes on. My going through this experience is effectively my acknowledging and demonstrating my willingness to play a part in it, becoming more aware through the experiences myself, waking up others, and jumping into the potential confrontations resultingly. My group that was delayed may be a further demonstration that we as individuals have to go about our process ourselves. We have to do it. We have to take the time to recognize the true reality and activate the awareness required to do so. So, quite possibly, my group will not arrive, and I must deal with this situation myself, and with a greater risk-taking, a scarier situation then for the personal self. It has us more so, stepping beyond the comfort zone of the personal self, and activates awareness even more, which affords us a greater recognition of the ease. This dream would serve as an objective view and demonstration of how whatever we cling to, whatever we agree with, the ideas and emotional attachments, what we fantasize about, can and will project us into a future lifetimes in accordance with the particulars of that which we have projected through our cause and effect experience forging idea creations. We can literally go so far as to create entire dimensions, worlds and universes that are based on what we are emotionally engaged with, like Star Wars type worlds, or those closely resembling the computer games that individuals may be very attached with and may find themselves there as a future life position. Anyway, I found myself initially on a train, on a journey of a kind, heading through streets and cities. The journey skipped a few scenes, and I had arrived at my destination. Seems I was in the presence now of a group of gangsters, or gangster-type individuals, and one of them was the actor, now deceased, James Gandolfini. He played the part of Tony Soprano in the gangster series The Sopranos, and although that was, yes, just a fictional television program, the individual, James, was very much in character as Tony Soprano, with the same attitudes and way about him, and the sort of scenes you may have expected to see him in the television series, as we would jump through several scenes of a gangsterish nature. Then I was suddenly in rather a curious place, a natural enough setting though very overgrown, and a large circular impression in the ground, as though something vast had impacted it and left a crater. The only part of this setting one could be, if not wishing to tumble down and explore the area below, was the rim of this crater-like impression. I had the impression I was in someone's subconscious. The rim of this crater was very overburdened with tangly weeds, and I felt these to be tap lines. So we have here, effectively, someone's causal body, and all the tap lines represent all the agreements and attachments that restrict the individual, and according to the nature of the ideas and attachments, dictate the individual's continued experience through the process of cause and effect. Joining me now was the individual whose subconscious it was. It was the deceased actor, James Gandolfini, and he accompanied me through the tangly, overgrown section of the outer rim. He was still portraying as his Tony Soprano part, wearing the sort of suit he would in that series, and we crawled around and around this tangled area. In the weeds there seemed to be other artifacts, and I was pointing them out to James. There were curious robots, miniature trains. Things were becoming more and more technologically orientated, and it seems only I could see these things. As we proceeded through the tap-lining mass of vines, I attempted to point out these anomalies, but James would simply continue on in a perpetual forward motion around and around this perimeter. Then there was a break in the dense vegetation, and an enormous flying saucer-like spacecraft landed before us, and I would inquire of James if he could see this, but alas, it seems he could not. Then suddenly James was gone, and I was alone in his subconscious, and all the more advanced technological artifacts and the spacecraft were sat now in the crater. Then there was another individual who was trying to get me to allow him access to this technology. I had a sense of ill intent from this finely suited elderly man. Seems he couldn't claim the artifacts for himself. And as I impressioned that he was not to be trusted and probably wouldn't use them for a beneficial purpose, I would deny him, even as he tried to convince me with the promise of vast sums of money. Then the dream would end. This dream demonstrates that which we focus on will project us into future lifetimes in accordance with our focus through cause and effect idea creating experience. And if we do not experience it in this lifetime, we may well have lifetimes reflecting our ideas and attachments, desires and goals unrealized in this life. Seems then this may also include any identity we become attached with. All personality types attitudes and ways of conduct are again created ideas, part of the created consciousness we have constructed as our personal selves. They are as much restricting and future-generating lifetime ideas as any. In this case, I would encounter James Gandolfini, the deceased actor, and seems I would view him in two places. Firstly, in a world where he was as much the gangster as he was in the fictional TV drama. He may have been on the astral at this moment and have recreated this fictional role and world, for perhaps he identified very strongly with his role, despite it not being real. For if he had no connection to his awareness and passed on, finding himself on the astral, he may not know where he was, perhaps unable to recognize even this next life level up. Individuals passing over with no awareness can be in a kind of bewildered stupor on the astral, drifting about in a haze of unrecognition until they get bored and drift back to the physical for another lifetime there. In the meantime, they may well reconstruct what they knew on the physical. As everything moves by thought and imagination on the astral, they will recreate what seems comfortable for them, as they can't recognize anything beyond the physical level. A little like in the movie What Dreams May Come, where the deceased wife of Robin Williams recreated a version of her house on the astral, along the lines of how individuals have houses on the real side that represent a reconstruction of their personal selves, but the unaware may well remain within them, as they cannot recognize the possibility of anything beyond their personal selves or the houses that represent them. And so here, James had reconstructed the part and the series he played in, that evidently he was very attached with, or perhaps was most familiar with, as he could recognize nothing of the astral level, and this then was his little created spot on the astral. He was once again playing the role of Tony Soprano, and I would be in his little created world for a time observing, and perhaps then I took the opportunity to afford him a chance to see more than his self-constructed consciousness and his creation here. I shifted to his subconscious, the vehicle and life level where all his ideas, attachments, taplines, where his created consciousness is. And there he was, crawling around and around this area. Maybe forever he might do this, lacking the awareness that he does. His five created vehicles just doing their thing, with no focus on anything but the personal self. All the vines were the taplines, I would say, and maybe then I was the one bringing in these anomalous artifacts into his causal body, or someone was, and I would try draw his attention to these, something different and beyond what he had always known, beyond what his created consciousness currently is comprised of, in an attempt to spark a little awareness, a little curiosity maybe, to perhaps shatter the astral Tony Soprano world he had made for himself. Perchance this would filter down to his astral vehicle and motivate a re-evaluation, even to the extent of bringing a spacecraft down to land before us. But alas, his concrete, literal, self-convinced consciousness was such that he was unable to see these awareness-stimulating anomalies. His causal vehicle then, as vacant and difficult to engage as any of his others, and he would just keep on crawling through the dense taplining of his causal body and fade from sight. I imagine he will stay in the astral a while, then eventually drift back to the physical. I had a sense that due to his strong attachment to the role he held so dear in the television series, he may well find himself in a life position resembling it. The experiences we set up for ourselves will be in keeping with the ideas that affect them, and I can imagine him finding himself as some gangster type in some part of creation somewhere, in a dimension or creation where such a position is available for him, even though the initial role as Tony Soprano was only fictional. We are the decider of our lives, and everything we choose for ourselves we can have, as creation is a reflective cause and effect bubble. Even if what we unconsciously choose is based on a fictional role in a movie or other, makes you consider too all the role models we are presented with. The heroes of the movie screen, or characters we identify with, identify too strongly, and we are deciding and choosing future positions resembling that which we idolize, that which we decide and agree with. As for the sinister character at the end of the dream, who seemed to want the anomalies that had been placed in the subconscious, suggesting a controller type, who had a greater degree of recognition than James, as he could see the artifacts, but unable to claim them for himself. The artifacts representing something beyond the personal self, little sparks of awareness inducing light from the ears. They are there, yes, but require recognition. The dark forces can see only so far. They can literally think that they understand the ears and the knowledge of it, but lack the awareness to recognize it. Lacking the awareness to understand how they can have everything they want without having to control, enslave, and own everything in order to get what they desire. And so the dark forces demonstrate their lack of awareness in what they do, not recognizing how through awareness and standing with the ears, they can have everything they want without cause and effect repercussions and the need to manipulate and program agreement from others.